Now, back to Stand Up with Pete Dominic on Indy, SiriusXM 104.
Oh, I wasn't ready. Wasn't ready to come back. Okay. Hi. Happy Wednesday. Thanks very much for joining. Blah, blah, blah. All right. Dr. Aaron Carroll is here. It is a Wednesday tradition now for Dr. Carroll to join us in the third hour. And when he joins us, you always join us on the phones, that is, especially 866-994-6343. Never is there a time, I would even argue, during open phones that we get and take more phone calls than we do with Dr. Carroll. He takes your calls. And that's one of the things we love about him. He is an associate professor, or soon to be a professor of pediatrics, and the director of the Center for Health Policy and Professionalism Research at Indiana University, and author of Don't Swallow Your Gum, Myths Have Truths and Outright Lies About Your Body and Health. His most recent book is Don't Crush Your Eyes, They'll Get Stuck That Way. We'll be giving away three copies of that today, and I'll let others judge, or maybe Dr. Carroll can judge if he thinks the question is good. We'll give away the book. We got a few left. His blog is at The Incidental Economist, which is awesome, which gets linked to by all the best wonks in the biz. And he is most importantly on Twitter, at Aaron E. Carroll. We always do right by him to get him a new Twitter follower. Sometimes it's lots, sometimes it's not. Let's make it lots today. New followers for Dr. Carroll, at Aaron E. Carroll, two R's, two L's. Good day. How are you? Aaron, are you there? I don't hear him.
Sorry. Yes, how are you? Sorry.
What happened? What was that? Mute?
I had the phone on mute until like you guys came back, because I was just, I forgot.
Did you hear any of what I said?
I heard everything you said. I just had my part side on mute.
How do you feel about being in a locker room with the gay men?
I've never really thought about it one way or the other.
Do you think you've ever been in the locker room with a gay man?
I think that that's very likely.
Very likely.
Statistically would say. I mean, I've been in locker rooms in school and then growing up and then now.
Are you in one now?
No, I'm not.
All right. What do you think of drug addiction? Pro or con?
I'm con drug addiction.
Well, you know, just had this argument. We talked to twice now about the drug war in today's program alone, and you know I'm kind of obsessed with it at all. But I mean, just the idea of treatment versus incarceration, and the idea that people choose drugs and then addiction and all that. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's like, we just had a caller, Deep Breath Steve, who you may or may not be familiar with, regular caller to the program. And basically said it's a choice and we should put him in prison and I'm, but all that stuff. It's just addiction and depression get treated very differently than cancer and cerebral palsy.
Well, yes, especially since we have some very bizarrely nonsensical lines about which substances are legal and which substances are not. And so, addiction to alcohol or addiction to tobacco is, perfectly, needs medical treatment, needs any kind of work, needs AA, needs all this stuff, needs all our help. But we've sort of set a line in the sand for some other drugs, many of which, of course, cause far fewer deaths every year. But those drugs require incarceration and not treatment. So, regardless, we're just not very very consistent, which makes no sense. So either we should think that addiction is addiction or addiction is not. But if we're going to treat addiction of some substances with medical therapy, it doesn't seem to make sense to say that other substances will not be fixed by medical therapy.
What about depression, though? Depression is an illness, and we don't look at it that way. We say, oh, cheer up. It gets better. It's just the conditions that, you have a tough situation right now. You just lost your job or your mother died or something, environmentally terrible happened in your life. And so that's why you're down, and snap out of it.
Do you still think that that's a very pervasive thought?
I do. I do. I feel that way myself about someone in my life.
Okay, well, I'm not saying you don't feel that way.
Not someone close to my life. Well, yeah, someone close to my life. I don't want anybody to think it's me or my wife or anybody, but whatever. And like, I look at this person and say, if you just improve the conditions in your life, you'd be better.
I feel like the stigma on depression, while still there, don't let me minimize it, is much better than it used to be. I think,
No, yeah, it is. It's better.
Treatment treatment for depression with medication is so much more widespread than it used to be.
Is it too widespread? Are we over-medicating people?
It's less that I'm concerned about over-medicating than I have general concerns about how well some of those medications work. There's a lot of debate about the actual amount or how much benefit you actually get from some of these medications. And since some of them have real reasonable side effects, there's some concerns about whether the harms outweigh the benefits. In fact, that's something you should have an expert come on to talk about, the most recent evidence about pharmaceuticals for depression and other psychiatric illnesses, how well they actually do work. Having said that, I wouldn't say we're over-medicated in the sense that there's probably lots of people who would benefit from therapy who aren't getting it, who would benefit from treatment who aren't getting it. So, but I don't know. Granted, I live in a small, cloistered, type of part of society, so I'm not necessarily the best bet to say what does everybody think. But it seems like treatment for depression with medications has far less of a stigma than it used to be. I know way more people who are on antidepressive drugs now than would have
been. I don't know anybody who is not.
Exactly. So it's hard to then say that, we're just telling people to, suck it up when they get depression. We're treating them. Now, we may tell them to suck it up when they're actively whining or maybe talking about it, but I would love to see numbers. I wish I knew them. But I think the numbers of people who are probably on therapy, pharmacotherapy for their depression is much larger than it used to be. And therefore, it's hard for me to say, this is one of those splits where, half the country says everybody should just suck it up and the other half thinks it's a medical problem. I wouldn't put this in the same class as addiction.
Are you in a good mood today?
I am.
Right, I'm going to ruin that right now. Watch this. Deep breath, Steve. No. You're on the air with Dr. Aaron Carroll. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, I'll calm down. I want to make a point between the difference between alcohol and even marijuana. There is no casual heroin, crack, or meth head.
Okay, what's your point?
That only has to do with the drug, not with people.
What do you mean by that, Aaron?
I mean, the fact that the casual user is only because the drug is so powerful. It is not. And first of all, I think you probably could find some, but I agree that the numbers are far less. But therefore, to say we're going to lock someone up because of the drug, if someone has an addictive personality, if someone is addictive, it's very likely they will try one if they've tried the other. So the idea that we're going to say, we're not going to treat the underlying issue. We're going to say, I'm sorry, if you touch this drug, you go to jail. But if you touch that drug, you're perfectly fine. In fact, you're sometimes celebrated. It's a little bizarre to me.
Yeah, but actual users, I'm saying, okay, distribution is different. Now I'm talking about the user. There's very few actual users in jail, right?
But what are you talking about?
That's crazy. They smoke.
Almost everybody in jail is a user.
Yeah.
I would, without even knowing anything, I would say a lot of them are. And you're saying
your chances of actually getting caught with a couple of OxyContin or a user amount of heroin or cocaine, right, and actually spending time in jail if it's your first offense is slim to none.
Okay, first of all, that's not nearly as true as you'd like to say. In fact, our jails are full of people who have only been busted for drug use. So how can you say that?
He can say anything he wants. Steve?
They did something else.
Know them? Really? I didn't know that.
I know.
Jack in New Jersey, you're on the air. Dr. Aaron Carroll is joining us, at Aaron E. Carroll on Twitter, 2 R's, 2 L's. Jack has a question about medical benefits and taxes, according to the screen. I gave it away. Sorry, Jack.
Go ahead.
That's okay. Hi, Dr. Carroll.
Hi, Jack.
I called last week, but I couldn't get through because Pete didn't think my question was, I guess, important enough, even though hundreds of thousands of my coworkers want to know this answer.
What the hell are you talking about? I didn't think it was important enough. Who told you that? Who would have relayed that information back? If people don't get on the air, it's because they might be kind of off topic, not because it's not important. I put you right on the air. I think your question
just mess with you, Pete. Don't get so jumpy.
All right. That was a lot of a waste of time. I lashed out. I apologize to both of Aaron and the caller. Go ahead, Jack.
I do not accept your apology.
Okay. All right. Turn your computer off, Aaron. I keep hearing it bleep, you jerk. Go ahead, Jack.
It's not mine.
That was mine, maybe. All right.
I work for a major corporation, UPS, and we have a health plan that UPS provides to us. We don't pay for it. But this year, for the first time, our tax forms came in the mail with the value of the insurance that we get, like $15,000. Now, Guys at Work is saying that the reason why that value is on our tax form is that we're going to have to count that as income and pay taxes on it, like next year or something. No, is there any truth to that?
No truth to that whatsoever.
Okay.
So, okay, now let me caveat that. They may be prepping for, say, 2017 when the excise tax goes into effect, because at that point, if your insurance is at a very high level, something like $17,000 or $19,000 for an individual, I mean, we're talking high, then your employer would be taxed for any money above that amount that your insurance plan costs. That will not hit most insurance plans. In fact, it'll hit very few of them to begin with. But that's a tax on your employer, but there's nothing that would be like that next year.
Oh, that makes sense. No, because we do have a Cadillac plan, and right now we're coming into negotiations for a new contract.
Yep.
And they're saying they want to switch the insurance maybe to a lower plan, like not a diamond plan.
Right.
And maybe that they're looking down the road that might be an issue for them.
Well, that could be. Now, and Grant, so we should let's discuss this a little more in detail, because there's some things to consider. First of all, that absolutely could be it, because they could be worrying about 2017, not 2014, and they just want to get everybody on board with the fact that this tax is going to occur. Secondly, you should still be concerned, because while this tax will be applied to your employer, let's be honest, that's going to trickle down to the employee. They're going to find some way to make you pay for this in the end. So it's still a concern, I think, as you guys move forward. But the good news is that there should be cheaper plans around. I mean, you know, your plan is probably fantastic, but the exchanges will still have high-level plans that will likely fall far under the cap for the excise tax. And even moreover, I'm very skeptical that the excise tax will stick around in its current format. Republicans hate taxes. The unions hate the excise tax.
When
two groups get together, it's unlikely the excise tax is going to stand.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you very much. Oh, my phones went down. What's that?
That was a good call. You should have given a guy a book.
Oh, call back, man, and we'll give you a book. Aaron decides who gets his book today.
After you insulted him and his at the beginning of the call.
I'm not familiar with what you're talking about. Kate, can you put Keith on? My phone just cracked. There you go. Hey, Keith, you're on the air with Dr. Carol at Aaron E. Carol is his Twitter handle, and you should be following him. Are you, Keith?
I am. And, in fact, I tweeted a link to you guys yesterday. I was wondering if Dr. Carol had a chance to see it or comment on it, talking about Kaiser Health News in conjunction with the Washington Post published an article yesterday. They called it Obamacare's Dirty Little Secret, No One Might Be Coordinating Your Care, saying how multiple doctors without the equivalent of a general contractor in hospitals are leading a number of patients to slip through the cracks, and no one's talking to each other the way they're supposed to be, and how much of a problem this is going to be when Obamacare's rules go into effect.
So this is one of those articles that I'm just sort of like bizarrely mystified by, and this is when I wonder if I'm in a bubble, because was anyone under the illusion that there was any coordination of care now, or that the Affordable Care Act would change that? No. Coordination of care is a monstrous problem. The fact that, you know, one doctor doesn't know what the other doctor is doing is a crazy, bizarre issue in the United States. Partially that's due to the fragmentation of our electronic medical record system, which we've discussed here before, and that there are no standards, and that there's no way for records to just be sent from one physician or system to another.
So that, just to put that quickly before you even keep explaining, what I'm hearing is this study and this piece by the Washington Post is highlighting an issue that wasn't created and isn't solved by the Affordable Care Act.
Not only that, but like they say, it's the dirty little secret. I'm like, where has this been a secret? Like, we've all known this forever. Everyone's been talking about this for years. We've talked about it on this show many times, that there's no coordination of care. That's the whole thought process behind accountable care organization, that you know, doctors will do a better job of making sure that things aren't duplicated, and that they will be more efficient, and that they will talk to each other, and they will get together in large groups, and there'll be better communication, and therefore care will come down in cost because we'll be practicing more efficient. That's the whole theory. Now, I've been skeptical many times on this show that will actually work the way they think it does. I've said many times that the Accountable Care Act is about access. It's about getting people more insurance. Improving the coordination of care is about delivery. It's about quality. I don't think that's what the Affordable Care Act does.
But correct me if I'm wrong, part of getting people more insurance is that if it's more affordable, meaning if the costs come down because, you know, people like the ones mentioned in the article aren't getting treated so many more times because things aren't caught, you then have more money because it's a zero-sum game.
Yeah, but let's be honest about what accountable care organizations, all that do. We say that that's about getting people more insurance. There's 12 steps between accountable care and then getting people more insurance. Those include, hey, if they practice more efficiently, that the doctors are going to get a bonus. So that's already going to remove some of our cost savings. And then all the money that we spent making that system more efficient, well, some of that's going to get absorbed by that. And then the insurance companies might want to keep a little bit of that money in profit because that's what private insurance companies do. And so a little bit may eventually trickle back to the actual price of insurance.
How would you solve this? How would you solve the coordination of care issue if you were in charge?
I think it's a delivery system problem. I think it's done at a local level. I think that has to be engaged at every hospital, at every physician's office, at every healthcare system, that they have to figure out why their system does not work. And then they have to fix that. So, you know, there was a great story by Atul Gawande, which looked at some hospitals in New Jersey, I think it was. And they basically found that, like, a very small percentage of patients in their healthcare system were racking up a huge amount of the cost. And they created a new system just to take care of those patients. That's what that healthcare system should do. In my healthcare system, it may be that, you know, we're actually not caring for asthma correctly. And asthma is accounting for the vast majority of our problems. And so we should create a new system to take care of that asthma. It may be in another healthcare system, it's a readmission problem. Patients aren't going home with the right medications, or they're not having plugged into their primary care docs right. Well, then they need to create a system to make that better. But the reason that care stinks in the United States is a multifactorial issue that's very different and in very different parts of the country. There have been studies that show even our cost differences and the way that we spend money are incredibly different from county to county, even when they're next to each other. Some of these issues are local, and they've got to be fixed, and the hospital system has got to be engaged. Now, we could put financial incentives in place to try to get the hospitals to want to fix their local issue. But I'm skeptical of sort of big solutions that say, we're just going to change this one factor about the healthcare system, and that's going to improve coordination of care for all 300 and some million people in the United States. Because it's not the same problem everywhere.
Including standardized medical records? I mean,
well, that would be a way. No, okay, that, let's back up. That would be awesome. And I would be 100%.
What is that?
So we've talked, you got to get Pete to pay attention to what I'm talking. Because this is
right, what
we've talked about before, where...
No, I'll remember what we're talking about as soon as you stop talking above my head. It's just certain words confuse me.
Got it. So electronic medical records right now are built by design not to speak to each other. Because it's in every company's best interest, once you buy their record, that it not be able to talk to anybody else's record. Because
no, I got to put you on hold for a second. You're killing me. Keith? Hold on. Go ahead, Aaron, and I'll go back to you, Keith. But
So every time, it's in every company's best interest that their EMR not speak to another company's EMR. Because that
EMR is an electronic medical record.
Yeah. Because that way you have to keep buying their product. Which means that when there's hundreds of vendors, that we have tons of systems that by design...
So standardizing the EMR, making all of the EMRs use the same kind of format.
Well, yes, exactly. So that at the end of the day, every EMR can export its data and import its data in the exact same format. So, hey, yours can have all the bells and whistles it likes, but it must be able to speak to everybody else's. And that way...
So, like, use an analogy for, like, an app, like a QuickTime, like video. Like,
I'll do it with a very easy one. We can all speak, you know, we can all speak sort of different ways in all parts of the country and use different words to say the same thing. But we all agree that there are 26 letters in the alphabet, and those are the 26 letters we're always going to use.
Yeah, but I don't like that analogy because it's not electrical interpretation on my computer, and that's what you're looking for,
okay,
isn't it?
Okay, so back in the day, you know, everybody used to use, you know, there was WordPerfect and there was Microsoft Word, and there were other smaller word processing programs around as well. But you could always save your document in some format that could be opened up by somebody else's word processing. It didn't matter which company you bought.
Right.
You knew at the end of the day, eventually, and it didn't start out this way. It started out that if you bought WordPerfect, which is what I had, you couldn't open your document in Microsoft Word. But now we have formats like RTF or TXT. There's ways to always save your document so that you can then open it up in someone else's. Today, like HTML, it doesn't matter what browser I use, I can open up the internet and see the see this.
Or if I could afford to have an app created for Stand Up Pete Dominic, it could be looked at on a Droid, on an Apple phone, on an iPad, on any other tablet, and on any computer.
Not the same because basically they have to create a new program. Well, the fact that they can talk to each other, perhaps, but
all right. So what was the point of bringing that? Why did Keith say?
Because that is a way that we actually could, if they mandated tomorrow, if the High Tech Act, instead of all these crazy rules of meaningful use and everything else, said one thing and one thing only. It said all electronic medical records tomorrow must be able to import and export data in one standardized format, and if you don't do that, your EMR won't count. I believe that that national law would make a huge difference in improving coordination.
But policymakers are influenced by the makers of the EMRs, and therefore they want to keep it difficult.
So he made a good point that when I said I don't think there's much you could do at a national level to just snap your fingers and improve coordination of care, he's right. That is one thing they could do that I believe they could snap their
Keith
fingers
is at a national
level.
Go ahead, Keith.
So I would like to see that, and if I can give an example of, that Pete can wrap his head around.
Insulting.
You go to your stock market account or your Quicken, you can download all your financial info in a comma-separated variable file.
Nah, you lost me.
You don't have to know what it is. But no
Thank
matter
you.
Where you go, you can download that, and you can open it up in Excel, and you can...
Right. Well, I don't need your example. Aaron gave the word perfect. Okay. What else? All right. Joe in Ohio. Thank you, Keith. You're brilliant, but I'm going to move on to keep it going. Joe, you're on with at Aaron E. Carroll.
Dr. Carroll, hi. My name is Joe Serino. I'm a small business owner here in Cleveland, Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And I've been a big supporter of healthcare reform and a president. I've walked the streets for the president. And I'm hearing a lot of negative stuff on all the talk shows about the rollout of healthcare reform.
Uh-huh.
And it's starting to get me really nervous. You know, Max Baucus said something. This was going to be a train wreck, and there's just a deluge.
There's a lot of talk about implementation right now, that it's going to be difficult to implement Obamacare and roll it out. Even from some Democrats are saying this, and that's I think what Joe is touching on. And I'll let you speak before I even go back to Aaron. But then I read yesterday that there's been a big improvement, and someone I think in the Washington Post said, "Hey, I'm gonna talk about this improvement," because it was Joe Klein rather at Time Magazine who had criticized something and then said I should probably now say that the administration has rolled out a solution for this, and I should talk about that because I was criticizing what the problem is. So is that what we're talking about, Joe?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I really push it with my people over the years about how because our healthcare costs have been skyrocketing. My people share one third of the cost. It's been very difficult to roll out the next year's cost with them. We they've voted to continue to reduce their benefits to keep healthcare reasonable. I really believe this was going to be a solution for them, and now I'm getting a little nervous.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Well, first of all, I think you always got to take everything in the press with a deep breath, because their job is to create controversy. That's how they get eyeballs. That's how they get excited. So every time they publish an article, oh my God, everybody's panicking about X. Take a deep breath, because next week we'll be panicking about something else.
Yeah, but Max Baucus.
Did you go and actually read the trend? Max Baucus was warning the administration that if they didn't get everything organized in time, that it would become a train wreck. That is factually true. And I would say the same exact thing right here. If they don't get this done on time, it could become a train wreck. I agree. But that doesn't mean it is a train wreck. It doesn't mean that it is a problem. Secondly, Max Baucus is a politician. In fact, he's one of the most conservative senators. And at the time, he was probably considering whether or not he wanted to run for re-election, knowing that he had a very big chance of losing. And he eventually decided to drop out of his race. So, again, it's a politician. I would take it with a deep, deep grain of salt.
Not to mention what he did with medical devices and slipped that into...
He's
a creep.
He's not the champion. My God, back in 2009 when I started coming on this program, we would be talking about Max Baucus and the roadblocks he was putting up to health care reform actually getting passed, that his committee was dragging its feet.
Yeah, so take with a grain of salt. You got to look at who's saying it. You got to look at why they're saying it, and that's important.
I really do that, but I can honestly tell you that I've done a lot of research on this, and it's very difficult, if not impossible, get any sense on how this is going to impact my company.
No, it's not. No, it's not. First of all, I respect you a great deal for what you're doing, for getting informed. But it's not impossible, and I'll tell you why. And I reject that, because right now you're talking to a guy who can give you the answers, and he's doing a damn good job. So you know it's not impossible, Joe, because you did the right thing to call in, and I'll let Dr. Carroll answer.
How big is your company? How big is your company?
We have 40 employees. The answer, though, is to be able to go onto the Kaiser Foundation website or some government website and say, okay,
I hear you.
I have 40 employees.
It should be easier to find the answers to your question. I hear you. But go ahead.
But do you provide insurance for your employees right now?
Just answer his questions. It's going to be all good. Go ahead.
Do you provide insurance?
Go ahead. I have 40 employees. This is the health care we're currently offering. What can we expect out of the exchanges in the state of Ohio? And I can't find that information.
But back up. Do you provide insurance to your employees right now?
Yes.
And is it comprehensive? I mean, does it have an actuary value of like 60% or 50%?
Well, of course. It's Anthem Insurance. We offer great insurance.
Then nothing will change. Like literally, it's like if you already comply with the law nothing will change. They're not going to make you drop your plans if they already comply.
No. I'm worried about the cost. I'm wondering. I mean, one of the big things about healthcare reform is that it was going to get the cost of. I'm thinking. Okay. I mean, this is how it works with a small guy. You probably know this, but every year an insurance guy comes to my office and tells me this is what it's going to cost you this year, and every year it's increased 15% or 20%. And if I want my cost to be lower, then I've got to go then I've got to reduce our coverage with our people, you know, with them to buy in on it. So, you know, we don't get to shop insurance. It's just not possible. So with the exchanges, the idea is, yes, you'll be able to shop insurance with thousands of other companies. My question is, you know, okay, what impact is that going to have on coverage? With the same coverage, what will my cost be? And I can't find that information anywhere.
No, there's no doubt about that, because that does not exist, nor would I expect that to exist anytime in the near future, certainly not planning beyond the next year, because we have no one was for breaking the private insurance market. Nobody was for the idea that we're going to, you know, reduce this to sort of a few simple ways to do it. Everybody is all for let's keep the very large, fragmented private insurance market in place and merely add to it. And I shouldn't say nobody, but nobody in Congress was for that. You know, you had zero, maybe one senator for, hey, maybe the way that we do it is not the way we should do it and that we should radically change this. For all the talk about this being, you know, radical socialism and tyranny, it is just adding 30 million people, only half of them, to the private insurance market, and the other half get the Medicaid expansion. That's the bulk of the bill.
Was I misinformed then? So in other words, come to fall, I won't be able to go onto a state of Ohio exchange, plug in the coverage that we're offering to our employees, and get a competitive quote on my insurance. I will not be able to do that?
Well, there's a possibility that depending upon how your exchange works, that they will allow small businesses into the exchange to start buying insurance. But you have to remember that exchanges are run at the state level, because that's also the way that everybody wanted to do it. And I cannot remember off the top of my head if Ohio was running their own exchange or if they defaulted to the federal government. But one of those two will make a decision about which small businesses or how many small businesses can go to the exchange. I think it's unlikely in 2014 that they're going to allow a monstrous influx of small businesses into the exchange, because they're going to have their hands full just trying to get it organized for individuals. The idea was that sometime in the future, small businesses would allow be in exchanges, and then even someday large businesses would be allowed into the exchanges. But it's not quite clear how quickly that's going to happen for businesses or how much. So I agree you're right, but this is the kind of thing that it was by design. This is how Congress decided to do it. So now to sort of for those same congressmen and politicians to be like, oh, my God, what a train wreck. Well, yes, you did this. If you had left other people in charge, maybe we'd have a more efficient law. But this is the law you passed, and so now to sort of stand up and start screaming about how it's a train wreck is somewhat disingenuous. It's why, in general, I wouldn't get my, you know, news or healthcare information from a politician, because their primary goal is not, you know, making your life easier. Their primary goal is their, you know, reelection and their continued.
That is cynical, sir. That is way out of line.
Well, then I would appreciate a little more consistency and often a little more knowledge about.
If what you're saying is true, and I love listening to you. You know, I think you're.
If what you're saying is false, however, I hate listening to you. The converse of that is.
Well, if what you're, I would hope what you're saying is false, because I think there's a lot of small businessmen that I know that really supported, that have supported the president and health care reform, that we're looking for, eventually looking for the opportunity to, for competition. And that's what we've not had. You know, I appreciate all the downstream stuff that health care reform is, you know, bringing into play. But at the end of the day, for a guy like me, sitting in front of that insurance guy and talking about, you know, talking about what my increases are going to be next year, and basically having nothing to, and basically either accepting it or lowering our coverage is just, you know, is just not acceptable. And, you know, and the thought that that's not going to change.
Yeah, but
there is
disappointing. There is an out. Because, again, and this is where I will take a different tact, I think, than most of the politicians you will talk to. There's an out. It's because the employer penalty is in place. And at some point, it may become more cost-effective for you to pay the employer penalty and let your people go to the exchanges and buy their own insurance. In other words, if the insurance that they can get on the exchange is significantly cheaper than the insurance that you personally can buy them because it's not off the exchange, then there will be competition. There will be employers that make the completely rational decision to say, instead of giving $2,000 to this insurance company, I'm going to give $2,000 to the government. You can go to the exchange. You might get a big subsidy, and you can go buy your own insurance, and we'll figure out the numbers and your salary to make that work for you. We'll give you the money in wages instead of in benefits, and we'll just pay the penalty, and you go there. So there is an out. There's a floor of whatever the penalty is, and you should have an accountant that can figure out those numbers with you, and I think that that is completely rational. There's no good reason that your plan, not on the exchange, should cost way more.
I like that idea as an employee. I like that idea. So you're gonna pay me more, and I'll get insurance on the individual exchanges. I like that.
So if that's the way it works, why wouldn't you do that?
Well, okay, that'd be great. But from a pure editorial opinion, it's just very difficult to be a responsible business owner, to want to be a responsible business owner, be responsible for people's health care, and be able to artfully, you know, sell that to your employees that what you're doing is really good for them, and not have people walk away and say,
I don't think so. Hold on. I don't think so. Let me.
Oh, yeah.
To me, it sounds like you can just say to your employees, hey, listen, I'm paying you more. I'm about to pay you more. I'm not going to be providing health insurance anymore, and that's because you can get it as good, if not better, on the exchanges offered by the new Affordable Care Act. Why is that?
Now that you have 40 employees, so it's like we're talking about a manageable number of people. Get them in a room, put up a slide, and say, hey, this is what compensation looks like overall right now. Let's say we pay you $40,000 in cash and $15,000 in for health insurance, so your entire compensation package is $55,000. But insurance on the exchange would only cost $10,000. So instead what we're going to do is we're going to pay you, you know, $45,000, and it's like, and then you can go buy. No, I'm sorry. We're going to give you all the money instead, knowing that you can go to the exchange and pay for $10,000 this plan, get the exact same thing. You'll have more money in your pocket at the end of the year. Why? What? That is being totally.
Joe, fly Aaron in. He's in Indiana. Fly him in, and he'll do the presentation for you for a small fee.
The problem is today that cheap insurance for your, or I should say, cheaper insurance for your employers is not available. So if you said to them, hey, I'm going to give you the money in compensation, you get your insurance on your own, that's not responsible because that plan does not exist. Because
you're sending them on Schitt's Creek there
right
now. But when those exchanges start.
It's totally responsible.
Let me ask this. So in the state of Ohio, sometime in the fall, I'll be able to go on a website and be able to plug in certain employees' demographic information.
Mm-hmm.
And identify what their, based on the coverage we have, what their health care costs will be.
That theoretically should be that. I mean, there's a lot that can happen between now and then, but that is the plan. That will be published.
If that person is in 40% of the poverty level, then that person gets this discount, and therefore this person pays X amount, and then my company gets penalized, but you know, for not offering it,
It's worth it if you're running a business.
Here's the thing. I think that your insurance companies aren't dumb. So I think what probably will happen is that there will start to be a realignment so that the plans start to look quite similar because they will know.
Wait, that would be competition.
Well, I think there will be some competition.
All right, listen. I got it. I got a break. Do you want to give Joe a book, or do you feel...
Oh, he can have a book, sure.
He can have a book. Doesn't sound like you want to give him a book. And he's been on the air asking you a bunch of questions. And
yes, give him a book.
Joe, do you want a book?
Absolutely.
All right, Joe. And Joe, who loves you?
Pete.
And Dr. Carol loves you.
Okay.
All right. I'm putting you on hold. And we'll get your address. We'll send you a book. We've got a lot more calls to get to and a lot more time with Dr. Aaron Carroll. I hope that you're following him on Twitter. It's the only reason he comes on the program, at Aaron E. Carroll, two R's, two L's. If you're not following him, you're missing out on a great deal of information as you're hearing on the air. You can get a lot of that on Twitter if you like to read. We'll be right back after these fine sponsors and the healthy products that they're delivering to you on a regular basis advertise.
Get involved.
Get involved.
Use your voice.
Use your voice.
Stand up with Pete Dominic.
All right. We are back, and we are joined, as we are every Wednesday at this hour, by Dr. Aaron Carroll. If you're not following him on Twitter, you're really missing out. At Aaron E. Carroll. On Twitter, two R's, two L's. And you should also be reading him at the Incidental Economist, where he blogs. Lots of great information, the occasional joke. He nerds out from time to time. He's a comic book guy, a D&D guy, a sci-fi guy. What do you like, Star Trek or Star Wars? I found out last week, and you're one of my closest friends at this point, I just found out that you also... we're a big fan of ElfQuest, which defined me for a few years growing up. I was obsessed with ElfQuest.
Than I was, but yes, that was part of the...
Wait, what did you say? You're not what?
I think you were a bigger fan of it than I was.
Yeah, I loved ElfQuest. Loved it.
Well, that's very good.
I think it was one of my first fantasies, Lita.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah. And Skywise. Moving on. Will in Philly, you're on Stand Up with at Aaron Carroll. Go ahead, Will.
Hi, Pete. Hi, Aaron. How are you?
Good. How are you?
All right. I've talked to you in the past, and you know, I used to work in the IT field in the healthcare industry for a few years, and I lived the meaningful use nightmare for at least a year.
Yeah.
Trying to get the doctors to document properly the EMRs. I agree with you totally, because we used to use an EMR called NextGen, very big in the industry. It's one of the top five EMRs out there, and they are very proprietary when you export the documents. Doesn't document it into like a Word document. It puts it in a generic NGN file, which is a file extension.
Right.
So it would be like the .NGN file. So it's NextGen's own format. But passing information between EMRs and labs, you know, there's a, I think it's called a protocol called HL7.
Mm-hmm.
They're called interfaces. And I can just tell you from my own experience, they're very expensive to set up with the
page. Yeah.
And it was like $5,000 just to have a conversation with a programmer to start that process.
Believe it or not, I'm actually following this entire conversation because we had it earlier and we kind of spelled a lot of this out. But you're basically, you know, it sounds like what you're saying with your call, that you're confirming what we talked about, that one of the problems, and Dr. Carroll offered the solution, would be to have electronic medical records be able to speak to each other. And right now they're all speaking different languages, and that's a huge problem. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But so you're basically adding, confirming what we said as a practitioner in the IT field.
He's also adding on. I answered this on Twitter, too. He's bringing up HL7, which is what, you know, people will say, oh, we already have standards. HL7, I think, is Health Language 7. It's supposed to be, quote-unquote, standards. But as anyone who's used HL7 will say, it's incredibly varied. Like, all HL7 will say, like, hey, this area of what I'm sending you is going to be labs. But the way code those labs can be incredibly different. So it's not enough. It's not granular enough. It's just the beginnings of what we would call standards. It's not adequate.
Well, another thing they're using is a thing called I2I. It's a software out there that helps the individuals coding the visits to quickly search without having to go through those millions and millions and millions of code you were talking
about. Well, hold on a second, though, because I'm just seeing a tweet here, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Will. I appreciate your point of view, especially with your background. But, you know, I'm seeing this tweet and from Dr. Carroll to another listener, author R.T. Kalin, saying other countries have a nationalized electronic medical record system often. So we know the solution with this and so many other issues when it comes to health policy, health care, because we've seen other countries do it. And this isn't one of those things where we could argue, well, they're made up of different people and there's more diversity and blah, blah, blah. This looks pretty straightforward to me, Dr. Carroll.
Well, it's also, you know, this is, well, first of all, we could just nationalize the EMR, but even then we can nationalize the standards. We could figure this out. The reason, in fact, one of the best EMRs in the United States that exists right now is the one used by the VA. And it's free. You can go download it and start using it if you want. And because every VA in the country uses the exact same system, they have a very easy time moving stuff from one place to the other, and they have a huge ease in sort of coordination of care. It's one of the reasons that the VA's quality has improved so drastically in the last decade. And people that use their EMR love it.
The EMRs are all SQL databases, really, on the back end, and that's where I see that's the disconnect between the GUI, the graphical user interface that you work with as an employee. All that information goes into a database. It's those databases that need to talk to each other. That's where they're making these relational references to, for instance, lab results. You're right about that. The HL interface is just like a shim, a conduit between the two databases, so that they can receive each other's information, really. That's all that is.
All right, Will, thank you very much. Yep. I appreciate a really good insight from someone who's on the other end of that. Matt in Michigan. And the phone number, 866-994-6343. Couple open lines if you want to join this conversation, get a question, comment, argument to Dr. Aaron Carroll, at Aaron E. Carroll on Twitter. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, PD, Dr. Carroll. I've been listening to you for a couple years now. Really love it. Sometimes you just really infuriate me, but ultimately I think you won me over on a lot of stuff. I want to say I'm conservative, and I sell health insurance for a living. And contrary to what I think a lot of my counterparts and coworkers believe, I think the Affordable Care Act is actually going to help me sell more insurance.
As a resource or a consultant to talk to companies to help them figure out what to do, I think there's a huge market for people with your skill set. So absolutely.
Yep, exactly. Now, I believe that employers buy health insurance for a reason. They get the benefit of attracting and retaining, you know, talented people or the best people that they can. So that being said, I don't believe that employers will just increase the pay of their employees in lieu of health insurance benefits. It's going to do a couple of things. If they do that, they'll increase their payroll tax.
That is correct.
Really no good. And it's going to increase their workers' compensation.
I totally agree. It's got to be a mathematical. It's not as simple as the number moves from here to here, but you can still do a mathematical calculation and figure out which will cost the company more to get the same outcome. And I think there's nothing wrong with being completely rational economically about this and saying to your employees, we've run the numbers, and the difference in price between the insurance we can buy here and the insurance you can get on the exchange is so large that everybody wins if we give you more money and you go buy it on the exchange than if you don't. Now, the calculation will be different for every company and their payroll and everything else, but it is possible to do the math, and it is possible to figure it out. And that is a type of competition which may help fix the cost of insurance outside of the exchanges, even without directly touching it. Now, I think it's complicated. I think it's going to take a lot of time to work it all out, but it's possible. I'm not saying it's just a flip of they should give the money one way or the other, but this is also, you know, I'm talking to a guy that owns his company and says out loud that he wants to do right by his workers. If companies don't want to do right by their workers, they can do whatever they want. You know, if their goal is just to maximize profits, they'll make their own decisions and they'll keep it quiet. But, you know, that's
well, you can do both, though. You can maximize profits and do right by your employees at the same time. I wouldn't say.
I just don't want everybody to think that I'm not saying every company is going to do what I just said.
Right.
I just was saying companies can be transparent and lay this stuff out. I don't think it's likely that a very large company is all of a sudden going to break down and get all their employees in one room and run the numbers in front of them. They're going to make a decision in a room, and you'll hear about it later. But these are doable calculations with the right data.
Matt?
You can make a decision.
Yes. Matt, go ahead. You good?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matt. Always great to hear from you. John, Pennsylvania, you're on with at Aaron E. Carroll, Dr. Aaron Carroll of Indiana University, and I think I've got one more book to give away today, at least. I should have given it to Matt, who's a long time. Hi, John.
Good morning, Pete. Good morning, Aaron. Hi. Let me start by saying I would love the book. The question that I have for Dr. Carroll was, what's to stop the healthcare industry from making a run at the market? And what I mean by that is there's a four-year delay before Obamacare actually kicks in. And you had a caller in this morning suggesting that every year his premiums are going up.
Mm-hmm.
So what is to stop? It's a two-part question. What's to stop them from obviously making the run and grabbing everything they can now?
Great.
But also, when these exchanges open up, what's to stop them from gobbling them up?
Two
things. Sheer consumer economics, owning the competition.
Great, great question. So, yeah, give them a book. So the first.
Damn.
The first
Love
question, there's now, if rates go up above a certain amount, they have an automatic rate review where the government steps in and they actually have to justify why the rates are going up. And if they can't justify it based upon the cost of health care and it looks like gouging, the rate is denied.
Is rate review part of the Affordable Care Act,
yeah,
a.k.a. Obamacare?
It's already happened. It's already rate increases have already been denied across the United States. It's already in effect, so that is one of the ways that that's going to keep it from happening. The second is the theoretical competition argument. If everybody has to sort of post what they're covering and how much it costs and it's all on the same website, then if every company would have to agree to gouge at the exact same time, which, of course, would violate antitrust laws and they'd all go to jail. Because if one company decides to gouge, but you can just go on the website and see, hey, this other company is offering the exact same plan and it's 10% cheaper, well, you'd choose that. So
right.
There's going to be a disincentive for them to do that because, theoretically, they're going to have to compete on a more level playing field. And if they do that, and other companies don't, they will lose market share.
Right. But they're already gouging, right? And we know that. Maybe not at the plan
level,
but
for the ancillary
cost.
It depends what you mean by gouging. It's if we're going to be completely honest about it,
sure.
The profit margins of the private insurance companies are not nearly as big as you imagine, not
right.
Like pharmaceutical companies. I mean, we're talking like a percent or two. It's not a huge profit business. That said, they have a ton of money which gets spent on non-healthcare things like CEO salaries and dividends and you know, overhead and advertising and underwriting and things which don't have to go to healthcare.
Sales.
So they're raising the rates not all the time to make enormous amounts of profit in the sense that, like, you know, they're just sitting in piles of money, but it costs a crap load to run a successful private insurance company because it's not the easiest business in the world, and there's a ton of overhead, and there's a ton of infrastructure.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons that lots of other countries don't go that way.
All right. I want to, John, we'll get your address, and we'll also be sending the feds and black helicopters over to watch you. On Twitter, at Wayne Henry says, at Pete Dominic, at Aaron Carroll, why does my left eye jump? It's happening frequently. Is it stress? How do I stop it from happening? Now, you're a pediatrician.
I was not going to answer that tweet, but now you're forcing me to.
Well, you would have answered it.
I don't know why his eye is jumping. How can I possibly answer that?
All right. Well, you answer a lot of my medical questions in text message form. And
well, but you and I would have, well, like, usually it's more than text, because I think I usually.
Both of Julia's ears are hurting today.
Well, see, we would need to have a longer conversation than I think you want to have on the radio right now, unless you really do.
Well, she has cotton in them right now with oil of oregano on it, and that seems to be.
Oh, you went there.
Let's go to Ian in Vermont. You're on Stand Up, Ian.
Hello, long time, first time, and I'm somebody that followed you over from POTUS.
I love you.
I'm not complaining about the new time. It actually
I love you. If you were here, I would tussle your hair, and I would give you a light kiss on the neck.
Like you, I don't have very much hair, so.
All right, well, then just the kiss. Go ahead, Ian.
So I work for a company that makes EMRs, and one of our big corporate focuses is a whole connected community of health and getting all these different systems to talk to each other. And it's definitely a challenge. One of our main competitors, the CEO, has basically scoffed at it and said it was a stunt. But it is something that we're working on. And one thing that I can tell you is because it is I work on a small piece of it, but there are major logistical difficulties to making it actually work properly. One thing that we do is we can get a patient's medication history for a certain time frame. And, you know, there are times we get medications back that the patient wasn't on. Sometimes we get medications back that a spouse may be taking. And it's not anything that's wrong with our application. It's just the data that's presented to us. So one of the challenges of making all this stuff talk to each other is the very real and very significant risk of getting information for a patient that doesn't belong to them or belongs to a completely different patient, and, you know, the obvious privacy violations that occur with that.
That wasn't listening. What's he saying, Aaron?
So there's no doubt that there's huge issues in making this work, if for no other reason than the data has never been stored in great formats usually to begin with. So I am in no way saying this is easy. I think it'll be incredibly hard, but the longer we wait, the harder it'll be, because we'll have even more data that needs to be translated. We've had one sort of EMR in our healthcare system that's been around for about as long as they've existed. We had one, you know, Indiana University has had one of the longest running EMRs in the world, at least in the country. But part of the problem is that, you know, even then the data formats sometimes just switch and even piece it. So this is incredibly hard. And it's one of the reasons why every time, you know, some politician gets on TV and says, information technology is the silver bullet, and, you know, in 5 years we're going to be saving hundreds of billions of dollars. It's crap. It's not going to work that easily. And it's going to cost us a lot of money to get the infrastructure up and going. And it's going to be difficult. And until everyone's interests are aligned, there will be tons of people standing in the way trying to thwart it happening, as the CEO you're describing will. So it's going to be very hard and very expensive and very painful, but we will not see the benefit and the gains that everybody keeps flippantly throwing around until we're willing to commit.
All right. I got to, Ian, thank you very much for your kind words, and thank you very much for the call. We've got to get, however, to the and I love to do this when Aaron's on. I try to do this at the end of the show every week. We've got to get to the Week magazine's top 10 news stories of the day, things you need to know today. Are you ready, Aaron?
I am ready.
All right. We have Holiday Road playing number 10. Teen mom makes $1 million porn deal. Are you familiar with this story?
Oh, no, but you said you ruined my day before. Now you've ruined my day.
Number 9, scientists create world's tiniest movie. IBM researchers have created the world's smallest movie by manipulating a few dozen carbon atoms on a copper surface. Does that interest you?
This is sometimes about coulda, not about shoulda.
I don't know if this one's in the top 10. What about that girl that got a trachea? Is that a big deal?
Did she get a trachea transplant?
No, the stem cells, and they made one out of carbon fiber.
That would be huge, but I've not heard about it.
And number 8, Europe's unemployment continues to rise.
Yeah, that's horrific. I was reading an article in Spain, and it looks so bad.
Number 7, brawl erupts in Venezuelan parliament. How come we can't have more fistfights in Congress?
We should incentivize that.
Number 6, Greeks protest austerity with a big strike. Number 5, Obama considers arming Syrian rebels. That sounds like a good idea.
Oh, God. Yeah, like, God.
Number 5, Bangladesh building collapse. Death toll passes 400. Oh, that's in Bangladesh. We don't need to talk about that. Number 3, FDA.
Accidents don't happen here.
FDA approves morning after pill sales to 15-year-olds.
It's a good step in the right direction, but still they're sort of not going far enough. But having attacked the administration for this many times, I'm very happy to see it.
All right, well, we're out of time for number 2 and number 1. They're not that important.
Do it.
Ricin found on suspect's dust mask. Obama renews push to close Guantanamo. That's it.
All right, well, those are interesting news bits.
Aaron E. Carroll on Twitter. We're out of time. Think for yourself. Stay tuned for the replay. Bye-bye. Thanks, Aaron.